Hey there, you're listening to Port Zero, a Polygon Studios podcast and your port of entry to the metaverse. I am Brian Trunzo, metaverse lead at Polygon Studios, and I'm joined today by the great and fabulous Justin Melillo of Mona, a fantastic project that is being built on Polygon. Justin, great to have you here today. Thanks for joining.
Thanks so much for having me, Brian. I'm thrilled to be here.
I know that you are thrilled because we've been talking about this for quite some time. So I'm very excited to have you here. I like to start these conversations with origin stories. So how did you get into the world of AR, XR, 3D animation, crypto, Web3, the whole shebang, whatever direction you want to take that question?
Well, Brian, it started in 1990. And when I was born, no. I think like my whole life I've been an artist, and I think like walking it way back, what I wanted to do, like when I was going through high school and trying to figure out my career path, I was really interested in helping people. And originally I was actually interested in like going to school to be a doctor or do something in medicine. But then I very soon realized after I got to college that I really, my focus should be on art and like creating. And if I could find a way to help people, you know, through creating, then that's what I would love to do. I've just been drawing and painting ever since I was a kid. And of course, was always into video games, Pokemon, like all of these, I think, like pillars of like culture and pop culture. And so I think like that sort of like lays the groundwork for this, like how I sort of like got into what I'm doing now with Mona. But basically, you know, I went to art school in New York at School of Visual Arts for computer animation and visual effects. After I graduated, I was a freelance VFX artist. Shortly, accepted a job at DreamWorks Animation, where I worked for a few years. And, so I'd always been interested in 3D animation storytelling. And while I was at DreamWorks, actually, a very good friend of mine, Matt Hurl, he was also living in LA at the time. We had actually gone to art school together at SVA, and Matt was getting me into VR. He had just gotten like this Oculus DK2. And I was like, all right, what's it? He's like, you got to come over, man, and check this out. And we're doing like this rock climbing app where you put on the Oculus and you're climbing up a mountain. It was one of the like first apps they had on there. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. And I had remembered, I don't know about you, Brian, but I had remembered when I was a kid going to like Disney Quest in Orlando, and they had VR. I had like known about VR, and I guess like it was sort of a blast from the past. I was like, wait, this is coming back again? I was, you know, and I think like back then it was this giant like apparatus that you had to step into. And I think it was like some sort of sword fighting or like shooting game or something. But I thought, like, obviously as a kid, I was like crazy, but then I hadn't heard about it. And I, you know, I don't think it, I wasn't really sure what was going on with it until, you know, Matt had shown me that Oculus, and I was like, wow, okay, this is crazy. And as much as I loved like what I was working on at DreamWorks, I got really into kind of exploring this new medium of VR. And I became introduced to AR from another friend of mine had told me about this startup company called Magic Leap, which was producing a spatial computing device, which is an AR headset that overlays VFX and 3D on top of your real world. So it was like, okay, when I was looking at VR and AR, I was like already very, very interested in AR, specifically because it's like, okay, being closed off from your world is really cool, but to be able to introduce visual effects into your surroundings like that was like just ultimate sci-fi futuristic, like this is the future. So I applied and got a job at Magic Leap, and I joined a team that was working on Mica, which is a digital human AI that you can actually interact with Magic Leap glasses. So I was like getting all into this. We built a couple other things like volumetric capture experiences. And so I could totally see the future and where this was going.
So basically what I'm hearing here is that you were born for this, and then all of life's experiences really solidified the fact that you were born for this. You followed this path. You acquired incredible experience through college into your time at DreamWorks and then at Magic Leap. So we're getting closer now to the present. This puts us where, like somewhere in the mid-20-teens, it sounds like. So where does the kernel of an idea for Mona come from? And maybe use that as a launch pad into what is Mona and what will Mona become?
So, right. I mean, after I had left Magic Leap, you know, I was working on just my own freelancing, a bunch of different AR projects with different artists. And I had become interested and like introduced to CryptoKitties. So actually, so while I was at Magic Leap, it was like 2017, 2018. A friend of mine like told me about blockchain, Ethereum, CryptoKitties, NFTs, and I was like, whoa, this is crazy. And back then, like, I felt like this was also going to be huge in the future, but it was still super early for me, and I couldn't really like quite like grasp how big it was going to be. So then, you know, I was still at Magic Leap. I left, went in, you know, was doing my own projects, freelance, and NFTs came up again when I had seen an artist that I had been following for a while had sold a $70 million NFT. And we all know who that is. That's Beeple. And I was like, wow, this is insane. Like, this is like such a huge indicator, signal, validator for digital artists specifically. Like, up until this point, as a digital artist, you could not like monetize your work in the ways that blockchain Web3 you know, technology allows you to. So seeing that sale and then digging more into it and seeing all these platforms that were available for digital artists, being a digital artist myself, I was like, this is insane. I love this. This is crazy. I need to do something here. And then combining my experience with like Metaverse, I realized at the beginning of 2021 that all of this like NFT art existed, all these amazing, you know, everything from JPEGs, GIFs, MP4, like videos, but then also like 3D art and sculptures. Like, all this art existed, but there was no like great way to experience it. So I got to chatting with my friend Matt, and we were sort of like riffing on this idea of creating a gallery space. And then Matt brought in our other friend Alex, who's a Harvard Blockchain Innovation Fellow, and you know, we were trying to figure out like how to build basically an NFT gallery. And so that's like sort of how that kernel of the idea started. So like, I built this first like VR WebXR prototype of an like a VR AR gallery that you could also access in the web. And it got noticed by the Tachyon Accelerator Program, which is run by Consensus Mesh, you know, and Protocol Labs. And so we actually got accepted into Tachyon. And, you know, from there, we developed the idea more and realized as we started interviewing more and more artists and users that what we had was much bigger than just a gallery platform. But we had a ton of architects, 3D designers, hobbyist artists, hobbyist creators, video game designers from AAA studios, indie game designers, like even native metaverse architects were coming in saying like, I want to build an entire world. Like, why? Like, I don't want to be restricted to one small piece of land. I want to build all these crazy things. I want to have animation. I want to have interactions. And it's like, okay, awesome. So what we have is not just a gallery, but this is like going to be the basis for the open metaverse. We're like, what we have is going to be so huge, because up until this point, if you look at like every other platform, and if you look at like metaverse platforms specifically, they were created based on like this land sale model and like this token sale model where you get like this, you're restricted to this plot of land to build on. And it's super restrictive for creators. So again, it just, everything just clicked together because, again, being a 3D artist, I was like, wow, this is a huge opportunity to really create the Web3 metaverse creation platform for creators and artists, you know? So we lifted all of the restrictions that are out there on other platforms. We don't charge creators. We're like, we're not going to sell land. We're not going to sell tokens. Like, we just want to give creators the tools that they need to build incredible virtual worlds and mint them as NFTs. And then, you know, from there, it's that's basically how it all got started.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is for creators by creators, which is such a beautiful way to go about running a business, right? This like fan first perspective almost on the product that you're building, right, as a creator yourself, something that you would want to use. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's the metaverse, the Web3 open metaverse platform for creators by creators. Absolutely.
And, you know, you mentioned the tools. So maybe this is a good sort of fork in the conversation to get a little bit more in the weeds and talk about some of the things that power Mona and some of the ways that creators interact with Mona and actually create within Mona. Can you speak on those tools and sort of walk us through what it's like for anyone who has not accessed Mona yet, what it's like to work with Mona, both from a creator perspective and then maybe even as a user, as someone who's consuming?
Definitely. So as a creator, typically, if you're a 3D artist or creator, there are already a suite of tools that you're using that you've had to, in most cases, have spent years learning. Some, you know, are easier to pick up than others. And if you're a hobbyist creator, you maybe, you know, have just started learning 3D. But regardless, there are already a ton of great tools like Blender, Maya, Cinema 4D, Gravity Sketch in VR, Quill in VR. If you're an architect, you're using Rhino or Revit. And so what we wanted to do is actually just create a platform that allowed creators to just continue using tools they're already comfortable with and just export those models from those tools into our platform and into our no-code template, which is built on top of Unity Game Engine. And once you export those models that you're already building into our platform, in a few clicks, you could just upload those 3D assets straight to the web browser, drag and drop, and then immediately you're launched into your own virtual world that you're building, and you could run around with your own avatar. And then from there, like we created this really quick feedback loop for artists in this way, where they can continue creating in the tools they're already using, upload to the web browser, test it out, see how it's looking, tweak things like lighting, shading materials, add different models. And then once it's ready to go, it's already running in the web browser. You just upload a couple of the files, like a preview image and a video, include a description about it, and then you can mint the actual world as an NFT. So then from there, the 3D assets get stored onto IPFS. So the 3D assets are actually decentralized and it's minted as an NFT. Once minted, it gets listed right onto OpenSea, where as a creator, you can then go log into OpenSea and sell your metaverse world. And so that's basically it. It's super simple. And it's a really great platform and a really great way to just onboard new users, not just to building in the metaverse because they're already using tools they're familiar with, but also to building in Web3.
You know, as I hear you speaking through this, it sharpens a thought that I've had for quite some time that many people share this thought. And I think it really originates with the Matthew Balls and Kathy Heichels of the world. You know, this idea that the metaverse is a successor state to mobile internet and is really just an immersive multiplayer internet, right? And it's easy to see, especially the way that you talk through it, at least the thoughts that germinate in my head from hearing you speak, how, you know, we start with the creators the way culture usually does, right? The creators are the ones who are innovating, and how mainstream adoption can accrete thereto, and then consumer culture can populate therefrom, right? So what I'm hearing is, or what I'm foreseeing is a way for brands, consumer brands, fashion brands, electronics brands, musicians, entertainers, film, movies, sport, to utilize a platform like Mona to create experiences that are either retail driven or experientially driven. I went a little bit like haywire with my thoughts there, so my apologies for like doing backflips, but maybe there was something that I said there that I can get some return fire from you on, like the successor state of the internet and how you see Mona playing into that.
Absolutely. I mean, Brian, this is so huge. And you brought up so many great points. Everything from like Matthew Ball and his essays and his new book coming out, Kathy Heckel. I mean, I think we're about to enter into this new era. We actually call it this renaissance of the metaverse, because I think we're at a point now, finally, where with Web3 and with the acceleration in hardware development, We're finally at a point where this sort of metaverse future, where we can spend more and more time in these interconnected networks of virtual worlds, like this is actually coming to fruition and is actually possible. And I think, you know, when I was at Magic Leap, actually, I was seeing early tests done on the AR headset or spatial computing headset on the Magic Leap 1 of this sort of immersive web browser, like WebXR. And what I was seeing was the future of the website. And the website, to me, like, it's not just going to be these 2D web pages where, yeah, you can layer these 2D web pages into your world around you, and, you know, you could read them like you would read a magazine or a piece of paper. But what I was seeing was the ability to actually bring 3D elements out of the web browser and into the world with you. I think, like, to me, like, the future of the internet and the future of the metaverse, like, it very much means it's an immersive internet. It's an immersive experience. And so I love that you bring up even everything from the idea of like different brands and different people and creatives and culture like entering and building in the metaverse, because I think like together with creators, we're really going to be able to figure out like what this immersive internet is going to look like. And that essentially like that is the metaverse. It's this interconnected network of virtual worlds, right? that you can all, you can access over the internet or, you know, via an app. But the point is that, you know, being able to access information and connect with others and learn new things and play games, like this is all going to be possible. And what's really exciting for me is the decentralized aspect of it and the need for the metaverse to remain open and owned by its participants and creators.
Couldn't have said it better myself, this need for an open and decentralized web. You know, sometimes it really does feel like we're pacing towards the end of Ready Player One, where the Gunters and IOI are facing off in an epic battle. I actually have that on a slide for a certain kind of presentation that I give. You know, I don't include it in every presentation because, you know, you have to know your audience. It may not land the way that it's intended. So, you know, you got to pick your shots. But with that, you know, I'm going to pivot into Web 2 actually for a second, because for some people who do not follow you, who are listening, they will not know how absolutely prolific you are on Web 2 with your reels and your TikToks, making, for me, for my money, some of the best content out there. So as a content creator, in terms of the marketing strategy around Mona, I would just love to hear the way you think about disseminating your project and sort of having it appeal to the masses, and maybe tying it back to Web 2 and using certain Web 2 tools and what the strategy is there.
Right. I mean, yeah, I think there are a lot of tools, you know, from the Web 2 world that are being promoted by companies like Snapchat with Lens Studio. There's a lot of exciting things. And I think this is actually a great example. So back in probably 2017 or 2018, Snapchat released this application called Lens Studio, which is essentially its own game engine, giving creators the ability to create their own AR effects using their app Snapchat. Basically, you know, on your desktop, you can create a face effect. It was like the first thing you could do, and create like some sort of face mask or makeup effect, or track something to your face. And then basically you can export this and upload it as a lens to Snapchat, which you can then immediately share with hundreds of millions of people who are on Snapchat, right? And I think like they set like such a perfect example for like how they were able to grow their creator ecosystem so quickly and grow, like, you know, really push this notion of like AR forward. In that, like, they created this really great software, but then they also started investing a ton of resources in creators and really just giving them, you know, the ability to create whatever they wanted, and listening like really, really closely to this community that was forming around these creators coming from different backgrounds who wanted to build all these amazing AR effects. And so they created like a really, really special like feedback loop and a really special community around it. And so that's like, I was sort of like jumping on that wave, because I was really excited that, wow, I could, like, without having to, you know, go through the Apple App Store or Android App Store, like, I could very quickly create my own AR effect and have it go live and have like immediate distribution. So I think like when you're referencing Web 2 and like those types of things, I think that maybe that's what you were referring to. And I think like that was a really exciting opportunity, because it was an example of like a company like Snapchat creating this bleeding edge tech and making it available, investing in creators, and really just making it free and possible for creators to build whatever they wanted. So I think like we take a lot of that as inspiration for the creative community that we're also building. I think it's like super important not just to invest in the tools and like systems for creators to build these metaverse worlds and build in 3D, but then also to like, I mean, like giving them ownership over it. I think that's like that piece that's missing from that Snapchat side now, is obviously because it's all centralized. But for us, like, you know, we're taking cues from the way they sort of like built up this really amazing platform and built up this really amazing community of creators. And so for us, like, that is the most important thing around what we're building. And we feel like if we just continue investing in the tools and resources for creators to build whatever they want, and then get their work out there, help them market it, and really just like, yeah, just give them those tools, then we're really excited about building this really vibrant community of creators from all across the world, all different creative backgrounds, many of them new to Web3, many of them even new to building in the metaverse and new to the concept of the metaverse. But they're really excited about just building these virtual worlds that you can explore in, have fun in. And I think like there's a lot to be said about like the virality of what's possible too when you give creators these tools to just publish whatever they want.
Yeah, it's really amazing, the flywheel of open source and just the ethos and the spirit of co-creation and collaboration, which is, you know, so important to Web3, obviously. And, you know, that for me, that's a good pivot into a line of conversation I wanted to have with you. And that's, you know, what sort of inspiration are you drawing from your peers who are building in Web3? You know, who do you look to for inspiration? And maybe even beyond inspiration, talking about the culture Legos, you know, the way Web3 protocols speak to each other. You know, you can call a smart contract and integrate it into your protocol. Maybe there are some partnerships that you want to talk about that, you know, you think will be integral to the Mona experience.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many amazing projects I'm such a huge fan of. I think, you know, everything that Protocol Labs is doing, like, I have to give them a huge shout out, obviously, and with us building with them and building on IPFS. I think everything that Protocol Labs is doing is really inspiring in terms of, like, building this protocol and then just making it possible for others to come and build on top of it and build these incredible apps. Things like NFT storage, which we use to, you know, for like pinning all of our NFTs as well. But then, like, beyond that, some of our partnerships, like one of the biggest partnerships we just announced was with Async Art. And so I think that's a really exciting platform that's enabling creators to build, to not just mint their own works of art, but also, like, with this new blueprints tool they just shipped, it gives the creators the ability to mint their own generative series as well. That's really easy to use, no code. And it's, like, it's such an amazing tool. And I know they're working on some other really incredible things beyond that. But I think, like, a huge fan of everything they're doing over there. I also have to, like shout out, not just, like, developers of protocols, but I think there are a lot of artists in the space that are really, really, like, changing the game in terms of what it means to be an artist and kind of, like, taking ownership in a new way and, like, really cutting out the middleman. And I think, like, music NFTs is huge for this. There are a lot of really great platforms out there that are giving, like, artists the ability to really just take full ownership over their work. And, you know, there are really some amazing music NFT artists out there, like Latasha or, like, Halik Mall or Stones Yorganic. You know, they're just some amazing artists that I've like come to know and admire. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, I'm a fan of a ton of different platforms and different things. I'm not sure. Yeah, I could probably keep going for days.
That was pretty comprehensive. I will not call it exhaustive because I know you can go all day, but that was definitely comprehensive.
Oh, you know, okay. I have to also mention my friend Sam Bao, who is the founder of 0x Essential. So I met Sam during the Tachyon Accelerator program, and he is also, like, just a brilliant programmer and creative, like, technologist, artist, and he is building, like, so many amazing fun tools. Like, he had built this CryptOrchids project, which is basically on-chain plants that you had to come and like water or else they would die. And he's also, like, building a lot of really fun, like, yeah, just different, like, NFT games and protocols and different things, like, around, like, this concept of battling NFTs with his Rasslers project. He's doing so many incredible, like, open source like tooling and things for the metaverse as well. So I had to give him a shout out.
Man, you've been so comprehensive, covering so much ground here, not just from the creator side of things, not just from the aesthetic side, but really getting into some of the more wonky, you know, Web3 native concepts of decentralized storage and, you know, on-chain art. It's really amazing that you sort of crossed the divide, or at least cover the divide between aesthetics, art, and also Web3. Do you think there's anything about your background that sort of pushed you into this direction that made you seemingly equally as curious in the actual crypto blockchain aspects to what you're doing and something that's a little bit more directly related to your background, which is the art side?
I've always been, like, super curious and super excited about new technology and new things, I think. And I think this does go back to, you know, one of the immediate and, like, first use cases of NFTs was this idea of collectibles, right? And so, of course, like, as a kid growing up collecting Pokemon cards, right? It's like that sort of concept, like, translating that into the digital realm. And now there are, like, these digital collectibles. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. So I think it's, like, part of it is, like, the kid inside me, like, you know, just remembering how much fun it was, like, to play these games and with these collectibles and, like, this feeling of community with friends. You know, I think a lot of that is in the ethos of Web3, and maybe that's what has also like drawn me in is just like this huge community aspect of it. I know like community gets thrown around a lot in Web3, but it is really true. Like it's pretty incredible, even through the pandemic, like just all of the amazing people and great minds and thinkers and creatives that I've met. And like my entire Twitter now, I wasn't even like pretty big on Twitter until Web3. And now it's like all it is you know, Web3 or NFT Twitter for me, which is incredible. It's just, I feel like I'm surrounded by all these builders like all day long. So I think it is like that community aspect of it. And really just like this new technology, I think like giving that ownership back to creators, cutting out the middleman, like all these concepts. It's been a long time coming, and that's also a really exciting aspect for me.
It's amazing. Yeah, you're really living at the cross section of all of it. And you know, you mentioned CryptoKitties earlier on in this conversation, which was also a moment of inflection for me in terms of my personal journey. So it seems that we have very similar cultural touch points, even though being separated by a couple of years actually in terms of age. That being said, you've touched on video games generally at the top. You've very specifically talked about Pokemon. You have a background in VFX, you're building AR and VR tools. So I'm going to take a leap here because you and I have never talked about this, but I don't think it's much of a leap. I think the context clues are pretty clear that you are a gamer at heart, I would imagine. So I would love to talk to you about any influences that you've had in your childhood, adolescence, and even adult years in gaming. What sort of influences you when it comes to games?
When I was younger, gaming was definitely like a big part of my hobbies and activities. And I think like as I grew older, I got more interested in sort of like the idea of filmmaking and 3D and creating. And then like recently, I kind of came back to the idea of gaming and got really interested in different games like Fortnite and like Valorant, and like this competitive gaming kind of concept was like pretty neat. But you know, that is you bring up, and I think I know where you're going with this, but like the idea of like all these digital collectibles in games, right? And these in-game assets. And it just, again, like seeing the power of Web3 and NFTs, like I'm just so excited for all these different like gaming projects that are coming out now. Where it's like you can now actually own the assets that you use in games. And I feel like that's such like an exciting concept and such a great utility, and something that, you know, again, it's a long time coming. Like people are spending more and more time in these games, in these virtual worlds. And it's like you don't really, like all the things you're buying, do you really own them, right? And you don't. But now with Web3 and NFTs, it's actually possible to, and the whole notion of interoperability. I mean, there's just so much there. There's like a lot to unpack, but definitely like growing up, I was definitely into games, and I would say like more so like storytelling games. Like I was a big Nintendo fan and loved like, you know, Super Mario, Zelda. And then like recently, you know, one of my favorite games is Zelda, the Breath of the Wild. And I think like games like that are really inspiring, because that to me is like a work of art, you know? So I'm really excited about like these kinds of notions of storytelling, art, gaming, interactivity, community, like all these things together, like that to me like equals Web3 and equals like what we're building in the metaverse.
I'm so happy that you called gaming art. I feel like this is a conversation, at least a conversation I don't hear often. A couple of years ago, actually, I'm remembering now a conversation that I had with a buddy of mine who's a cinephile, where I was trying to pill him on crypto and also NFTs. And I was trying to explain to him how video games are the highest art form in terms of both aesthetics and storytelling, all three of aesthetics, storytelling, and interactivity. I think I failed in that conversation, but years later, he's become more and more interested in NFTs. So I'm still doing work on that guy. We reserve 30 minutes for these conversations. They're meant to be quicker tidbits of information about some of our best partners and their influences. And, you know, I thank you for coming on, and we're approaching that mark, although, you know, I think that you and I can talk for hours about this. So maybe with some parting words here, we can hear from you some interesting things that Mona's working on rolling out over the course of the next weeks and months. So what's most exciting on your roadmap that you can talk about, or that you are willing to talk about?
For sure. Yeah. So I would say, just recapping, you know, we launched in October. We've onboarded thousands of builders to the metaverse. We're continuing to just push forward with developing new tools and resources for builders to continue creating these incredible virtual worlds. You know, on top of the infrastructure we're building, we do have that multiplayer experience layer. So through the web browser, totally easy and free for anyone to jump in and have a multiplayer experience with customizable avatars, voice chat, text chat. We also have token gated access on Metaverse Spaces. Coming up, you know, some of the newer features that we're going to be shipping are, you know, more things that are just centered on enhancing that multiplayer experience. You know, we know like, you know, everything from like video live streaming to holding more and more events and creating tools for creators to kind of like host more events in these spaces is going to be really key. And, yeah, I would say like just coming up in the next few months, we actually have a few events on our docket. So we're going to be at Consensus in Austin in June, and we're going to be doing some demos there. And then in NFT NYC later in June, we're going to be doing a pretty big event. It's gonna be wild. So I know you'll be there. I'm excited to catch up with you in New York. But you know, we'll be showing off a ton of these different worlds that creators have built in a totally new immersive exhibition. It's gonna be wild. So those are just some of like the things that are coming up in the near term that I can talk about right now.
Of course, it's like, what kind of alpha can you actually drop?
Yeah.
No, Justin, this was an absolutely incredible conversation. I couldn't tell you thank you enough, really, for this conversation. So as we head out, I'll kick it to you one last time. Where can people find you?
Well, I gotta say thank you so much for having me, Brian. This was such a huge pleasure. So really super grateful. Thanks for your time. Thanks for having me. Anyone who wants to get into Mona, you can find us at monaverse.com or mona.gallery. That's our website. You can follow us on Twitter at Monaverse, on Instagram at Monaverse, or on Discord, mona.gallery/Discord. Dive in, come say hi, join our community. We'd love to have you there.
You can catch a new episode of Port Zero every other Friday. And you can also catch the Polygon Studios crew delivering a weekly video briefing on the Polygon Studios YouTube. That's every Wednesday. Be sure to follow Polygon Studios at Polygon Studios on Twitter and all other social media, Discord included. So, you know, don't be afraid to join our beautiful burgeoning community. And this is Brian Trunzo again signing off. Thank you for listening to Port Zero.